This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
KMOX is at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Now, here's your host, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, and thanks, Mr. Calhoun, for passing the baton. Welcome. And thank you for stopping by. We will be taking a good gardening stroll shortly. If you have any questions, concerns, or comments about your freezing outdoors or your nice warm houseplants indoors, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. On Saturday mornings, we get together and we have a roundtable discussion about what's impacting your backyard, your front yard, your side landscapes, your specialty garden space, a taste of the tropics and houseplants. What is potting mix? How to improve your soil, shearing and pruning, removal of bugs and diseases, and using information to make good decisions. My thoughts, orchestrations, hopefully open and solidify your options. With the final judgment on action, of course, is going to be yours. And this is your show, and I certainly appreciate you inviting me into your home, car, or wherever you happen to be listening. Another really important player in this game is Greg Harvey. He's producing again today. And so when you call, he'll ask you your name and where you're calling from. And that's about all he puts it up on the screen and keeps everything rolling smoothly. I'm Mike Miller. I've been hosting the Garden Hotline since 1994. I've written 5 gardening books, 2 are currently available at various locations, and I write an article for the Missouri Gardener magazine. That's a magazine that comes out every 2 months. During the week, I do landscape consulting, which I call a walk and talk, where I come to your home, we can evaluate situations you're concerned with, and I keep my eyes open for things that I think might be impacting in the future or impacting right now. So you can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com. On the homepage, there's my email address and phone number where I can be reached. And today, the Good Gardening Stroll is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. I headed from South City onto Gravois, and that becomes Tucker. I went left. No, is it left? Did I go right? Did I go left? Let's see. I think I turned right on Spruce. Eastbound, then around the stadium I go, and to the east side. Boy, that ballpark village construction is, whoo, it's really wild and crazy, and can't wait to see it when it's finished. On the north side of the highway, yes, the north side of the stadium. That's where ballpark village is. And there's all kinds of signs telling you, well, if you go straight ahead, you can get onto 44 or 55 or 6440 or whatever. But it doesn't really matter all that much. As I started to step out of the car, the light was barely coming up from the sun on the east. But there was lots of crows hanging out at the stadium. They were all hanging out on the Budweiser sign. I couldn't figure out why so many were up there. My guess is probably the Budweiser sign at the stadium could have been warm, so the crows were just taking a break and warming up. This was where the right field gates are, number 6. And there's some seasonal decorations left over. Those cut spruce branches and some corkscrew willows were still there. There's an office entrance, and there's actually a ticket vending machine along there as well. The planting on this side, on the east side of the stadium, really mimics what's on the west side of the stadium as well. It's all deciduous, and I think on the other side, though, the Stan Musial side, I think there is some boxwood and stuff like that. On the east side, there is not any boxwood. And there's all the sticks and branches and twigs and trunks. They stood naked. Oh, and they were shivering. There's a short black wrought iron fence which separates the sidewalks from the planting space. And all the wrought iron fence also has the Cardinal logo attached to it. And There's a seating wall as well. Boy, you sit down on a stone seating wall this time of year. Woo, you talk about cold. And a sign reminds that 11-time world champions. The last time the Cardinals were world champions was 2011. Well, spring training starts February 12th. So hopefully that will lead to the 12th world championship for the Cardinals. And a brrr. I had only been out about 10 or 12 or 15 minutes or so, but it's so cold. I got to get back into the car and head to KMOX. So if you have any questions, concerns, or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, here's Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, questions, concerns, or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. First call is going to be from Illinois, Morrill, Illinois, and that's where Terry lives. Hi, Terry.
Hi, Mike. I have a question about the grapevines and knockout roses as far as trimming. When is the best time to trim grapevines and knockout roses?
The grapevines can be pruned basically in February, so you can do it whenever you want to get out there. I wouldn't necessarily say get out today because it's so cold, but just get it done for, you know, sometime within this month is the best time to do it. And the knockout roses, you still got a little bit of time. You definitely want to get it done before any kind of new growth begins. That's any kind of, it's going to be the leaf buds that come out first. And they are already there on the stems, but I'd probably wait for them until mid to late March, maybe. And that's weather dependent, of course, and we never know what our weather's going to do.
Okay, when it's really cold like this, it won't affect the grapevines if I trim them back now, would it?
No, it wouldn't.
If you want to, and how aggressively? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say no. If you want to get out there and do it, no, there's no problem for the plant material at all.
Okay. And how aggressively can I trim the grapevines? I was told that I could trim back to the first, I guess, little nub that comes out of a side branch of a trunk. Is that correct?
Sure, you can cut them back that far. If you look at some of the pictures of, let's say, vineyards for wine or, you know, grape growers or things like that, when they've pruned their, you know, their grapevines back, depending upon the age, it's going to be a little bit more exaggerated as far as size goes. But yeah, I mean, that's exactly where you want to do the pruning.
Great. And lastly, thank you very much for the service you're providing this community. We all enjoy listening to your program, and It's just a great service you're providing. I think everybody gets something out of it.
Well, great. Well, thanks for having me on your show.
Thanks a lot, Mike. Have
sure.
a good day.
You do the very same thing. Yeah, and so anybody else with questions, concerns, or comments? It could be about grapes. It could be, oh, my cool seasoned vegetables, how are they doing? Well, I'll tell you, I've got a real concern. This year, with this weather getting as cold as it has, and Tracy and I were talking the other day, and she said she doesn't remember, and I don't either, a winter quite as exaggerated as this one has been, where we have had temperatures basically near zero, and then within less than two weeks, we're up to 70. And now we're back down to really, you know, cold. I mean, we're not quite down to the single digits, but pretty darn close. And it's really, it's kind of tough. And what, you know, my concern is, historically, I always plant my bulbs because I'm just, you know, I've been doing it for a long, long time. It really started when I was in Soulard. We only had a courtyard, so I couldn't plant my spring flowering bulbs in the ground because there was no space. So that's when I started putting them in pots. And with this year, as cold as it has been, I'm really concerned about my bulbs as being, you know, surviving. And so there's no way to know. I mean, I guess, well, I couldn't do it right now, like go out there and dig, you know, dig into one pot and see how they look. But there was a time, I forget exactly how many years ago it was, but probably about 50% of my bulbs got frozen. And so consequently, you know, they don't germinate. They don't send up any foliage. They don't obviously send any flowers. And these are very good bulbs that I have. They're from Brightside St. Louis. I get them every year. I get daffodils. I get various other things. And then I buy some, you know, some other types of bulbs just, you know, wherever I happen to be, you know, whether it's grape hyacinths that year or crocus this year or anything else. So I'm sort of sitting on the edge of my seat with anticipation of not knowing what's going to actually happen with the, you know, with the bulbs. And yes, they're in pots. I've got really fairly large pots. So there's a couple inches of potting mix between the edge of the pot and where I put my first series of bulbs as I kind of fill the entire pot. But, it's always kind of tragic when you get to that situation where you've been waiting for, let's say I planted them probably mid to late October. And so it's been a couple months and it's going to be a couple more months before they even send up any growth that I could actually find. So consequently, this is what we're looking at. And I don't know. I sit there, I look out at my windows and I look at the pots and I think, are you guys okay? There's no really way to know. And they are, I mean, the potting mixes now are just frozen. All that rain we had, which I'm glad we had rain, and because that helps, you know, it percolates down in the ground. It helps insulate the root systems and everything else. And speaking of rain, I don't know if you were listening to Charles Brennan last Wednesday, but Charles Brennan did an imitation of my voice doing, you know, related to landscape and things like that. So if you want to listen to that, I mean, he did a really good job, but my fear is he did such a good job that he may be planning on taking over the garden hotline, and people would never know the difference because he can sound exactly like I do. Now, I don't know if he has information-wise, but if you ask a question and you're asking a question because you don't know the answer, then Charles Brennan could tell you anything he wanted, and you wouldn't know if it was right because you don't know the answer in the first place. But Charles Brennan doing an imitation of me on air last Wednesday, when I heard that, it made me really short of breath because I don't know how stable, you know, this me and the Garden Hotline is. Anyway, let's go to Joan and Lee May. Hi, Joan.
Good morning. You're talking about the bulbs?
Yes.
Are you sitting down?
Yes.
Well, I'm handicapped, and I had put my cannas and the elephant ears in pots, and I had someone carry those pots down in the basement for me, and I forgot about them, and I didn't dig them up, and I've got cannas starting to come up. They're about a foot high already.
That's perfect.
And my elephant ears are starting to do the same thing.
So do you have them at where there's grow lights?
No, I don't have any light at all. I have basement windows, but I've got curtains over the basement windows. But, I was dumbfounded. I went, what's the PC? Where'd you guys come from?
Well, that's perfect. Now, what you can do in the future, there's nothing wrong with leaving in pots like that if somebody can carry them in for you. Just put a black plastic bag over the top of them, and that will prevent the germination, or it should prevent it.
Okay. But I was just wondering, you know. And then also, I have a question.
Sure.
As I said, I'm handicapped, and I can't do the work myself. But every year for Mother's Day, my daughter buys the tomatoes and the soil, and she comes over and she plants my tomatoes for me. But in the flower bed where I was planting, I don't have much space, and I only had the one flower bed, but my tomatoes were excuse my French, crappy last year. I'm almost ready to give up, but she thinks maybe it might be the soil or something that I have, I'm having problems with. Or she said the fact that you have tomato plants on the end and you put, rose bushes on the end and you put the tomato plants between them.
That shouldn't really be impactful. Now, how long have you grown tomatoes in this area?
Ever since I've been here, about 19 years.
So, and this is, last year was the first year they didn't do so well?
They didn't do too well the year before that.
Yeah, so it may be, it may be something where...
Thinking that maybe that would help.
Yeah, probably getting a soil test done would help also, but I'm assuming you're using tomato food on them?
Yes, I did. I bought the, I can't think of the name of it, but
yeah.
I did use Miracle-Gro. I mean, Miracle-Gro, all it is going to be vines. It doesn't give me the tomatoes.
Yeah, right. So make sure you use tomato food because it's going to have some micronutrients like calcium to prevent some of the problems with you know, let's say blossom end rot or various other things with the tomatoes. But also last year was a little difficult for a lot of different people, you know, as far as tomatoes go. Some people had great success with them, and other people didn't have very good luck. And these were people similar to yourself that have been growing them for quite a long time. So now, just so the roses are not getting so large that they're overshadowing your tomatoes, that would be problematic. And just, you know, make sure that when you're, I'm sure your daughter does, that she gets varieties of tomatoes that has, you know, some letters after the name, and those letters indicate that that particular variety of tomatoes is resistant to some of the problems that tomatoes historically have. So that's, you know, other than that.
The tomato that I buy, like the Big Boy and the Celebrity.
Yeah, and Better Boys and all that other stuff. So as long as you're getting the big name, you know, varieties, then you should be fine. It was just last year was just not a good year for many people in relationship to their tomatoes.
But I had vines almost to the roof.
Which, you know, who cares if there's no tomatoes on them?
I swear, I feel like the Jack and the Beanstalk here.
But basically, you know, and it was the normal variety and everything else, so it's surprising that they got quite that big. But there was somebody that called last week that had the same type thing. His tomato plants got really huge, but his actual production of tomatoes was not very good, and he was a little bit, you know, troubled by that.
Yeah. Well, like I say, I buy the, I can't think of the name of it, but, you know, you can put on evergreens, too. You buy it for evergreens, but you can buy it for plants, too. If you don't say the name of it, I'll remember it. But right off the top of my head, I'm having a senior moment. I can't remember.
Senior moment, me too. But anyway, just get one. You know, it'll be in a box. It's by Scott's, and it'll say tomato food, and it will have the calcium and other things like that. And maybe through the years, the micronutrients have been, let's say, depleted, and that might have a factor, you know, as far as, you know, flowers getting pollinated, consequently producing the tomatoes. But obviously your tomatoes were healthy because the vines got so large. But if you're not getting any fruit production, who cares?
Right, exactly. I could have put another orange bush in there.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, Mike, thank you very much.
Certainly. And as far as your, you know, your cannas and your elephant ears, the problem with them, you know, sprouting, that's great, but they're not going to be able to go outside for another couple months. So hopefully the growth won't get so weak that the stems or the foliage is going to, you know, bend over, because then what you're going to have to do is cut all that off before you put them back outside.
Do what? What did you say?
You know, if the stems and the foliage gets really weak because there's not enough light in your basement, what you're going to have to do is cut all that off before you take them back outside, and they should be able to regenerate some new growth outside.
Well, I'm glad you told me that. Cut them back down to the soil level then.
Right. Only if they start, you know, bending over and get really weak or really thin or really ugly looking, then cut them off. If they look healthy, you know, then just leave them alone.
Okay. Well, thank you for listening.
Certainly. My pleasure. Thank you for having me on your show. Thanks, Joan. And Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
When the snow falls in St. Louis,
most areas have seen between 4 and 6 inches.
The KMOX Air Comfort Heating and Cooling Storm Center is there for you.
Schools are closed, events are canceled.
It's up to the minute forecast.
I'm AccuWeather with the meteorologist Steve DeBoer.
What's happening on the snow covered highways and city streets?
Weather is still an issue.
Snow is really starting to come down.
And the KMOX news team on the scene.
Brian Feldman, he is at MoDOT.
Live in the Metro East Red Blue.
Plus all the info on school and event cancellations.
Remember, you can always check the very latest information at KMOX.com.
Winter weather. We've got it covered on News Radio 1120 KMOX. This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with your host, Mike Miller, on KMOX.
Yes, folks, if you didn't happen to be listening to Charles Brennan last Wednesday, well, during the break there, Greg went and found the podcast, and he actually found the segment where Charles Brennan is doing a, let's say, what, an interpretation or whatever of me. And so here you go.
Cole, you're on KMOX.
Hey, good morning, Charlie. I heard you do a really good Mike Miller impression, the guy who does the Garden Hotline.
Oh, I did that years ago. I haven't done that in a long time, Cole, but all right, let me see. Let me see if I can do this.
Yes, folks, the rain today, your plants are really enjoying it, and they need it for those root systems.
How was that, Cole?
That was absolutely fantastic.
Thanks. Thanks a lot. I'm working on it. Going to take that to the funny bone.
So there he was. I mean, even Greg was fooled. He thought it was, you know, he's impressed. So that's why I'm so darn worried that Charles Brennan's going to try to take over the Garden Hotline. He's going to sound like me. He's going to do everything. And then I'm going to be sort of standing on the corner with a cardboard sign. I used to do the Garden Hotline. Please help. Let's go to Chesterfield now, and let's go to John's yard. Hi, John.
Good morning.
Hi.
I got a question about Iris, but first I'd like to report that my daffodils are coming up already.
Whoa! Wow.
I've had this bed of Iris for a long, long time, and I used to religiously thin it out at the end of each spring. A couple of years ago, I got behind, and it was so crowded, I just dug the whole thing up. Threw away the really big ones and the really little ones and planted about two dozen medium-sized ones. Last year, the foliage came up just fine, but not one single bloom. Is it worth waiting to see if it works this year or what?
No, they're not going to bloom. Basically, what they do, they have a somewhat limited life. That's why I always, you know, what my recommendation is always, if you have a bed of iris, any of the fans, so in other words, the individual plants that do not produce any flowers that particular year, they're pretty much cooked. They're, you know, they're too old. So that's what's happening with it. It's only the younger ones that, you know, continue to do, you know, produce the iris flowers. Now, there's been, you know, I've talked about this for the 25 years, basically, I've been doing this show. And I, you know, I learned this from the Irish Society in relationship to what was going on at the Botanical Garden. So that's how I found out about it. And, you know, because I didn't realize that's what was going on myself. Until, you know, before, longer than 25 years ago, that's when I was working at the Botanical Garden. But those fans are just, you know, they're shot. Now, there's been some callers through the years that have said they've just let theirs go. And even after a couple years of no flowers, they, you know, started flowering. So I don't know if it's the original fan or if it put out a new tuber. And that tuber, you know, is basically a young plant. And that's why they started flowering or what actually happened. But yeah, if you got, you can certainly leave them and just enjoy the foliage this year, but I wouldn't, you know, expect, but maybe you will get some flowers.
So even though I aimed at only getting the, like, a two-year-old tuber to replant, that wasn't going to work.
Right. So you were just guessing on the age of that particular, let's say, tuber of the iris that you selected. So you didn't really have any kind of idea of what was going on as far as, you know, how old that particular section of the root system was.
I went by size, that's all.
Yeah, right. And that's not necessarily the way to do it. You can't really tell by looking at the, you know, the roots. Like if you go to a nursery and they'll have, let's say, the bare root iris, and you can see the sizes of them, but these have been grown at professional nurseries, production-type nurseries, so they know how old they are. And so you can anticipate, like I said, any place between 8 and 10 years of flowering with that one that you've just bought.
So when should I, if I want to do new iris, when should I plant those?
As soon as the garden centers have them available.
Okay.
So that's probably going to be another several weeks, but they may even have them right now. And you could actually start them, you know, if you wanted to, or just, you know, just hold on to them. And then I wouldn't rush to put them in the ground because they have to have some warm soil to trigger the growth. So if you wanted to wait until mid-March to put them in, you could certainly do that.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
Yep. And now let's go to Florissant. Joe, how are you?
Yes, I have a cherry tree, a blooming cherry that I bought 2 years ago. And now it's splitting right where the limbs come out. It's a it looks beautiful, but I'm afraid I'm going to lose it. The limbs are real long, and I was wondering if that was the reason that I could just trim those the limbs off, make them so they're not so heavy. I don't want to lose the tree, but I just don't know what to do to help it.
So are you saying the actual bark of the trunk is splitting?
Yes.
Yeah. Ah, that's not a good sign. What my guess is, probably the days of old, all the nurseries would have a dot painted on the trunk of trees that were susceptible to getting sun scald or sunburn on the trunk. And you'd always have to orient that dot towards the north, because that's the side that if it got turned towards the south, it wasn't used to getting that sun beating down directly on it, and that's what causes the bark to split. Now, since this is a young tree, maybe you're okay, maybe it's fine, but cutting the branches off is not going to make that much difference. If you feel comfortable doing it, you can, but I don't know if that's going to solve your problem or not. So it's just going to be a question of, you know, maybe this just happened and it's going to be able to recover itself. But if you can get out there and take a look when we get a little bit warmer weather, just kind of, you know, pull the where it's split back a little bit and kind of see if you're seeing any kind of the heartwood, the center wood, or if it's just actually the bark that's split. If it's the bark that's split, then it is probably sun scald. And the problem with that is that interrupts the veins, because the veins of the tree, which move nutrients and moisture up from the root system to where the foliage is going to be, is right below the bark, and if the bark is split, then the veins are gone.
Well, it's split farther up where the limbs come out of the trunk. You know, it's about, say, maybe 3 or 4 feet up. It's a small tree, but it's not split at the bottom.
Okay.
You know.
So then, so is this a weeping tree?
No.
Oh, so
no,
it's just
it's just a flowering.
Like a Kwanzaa cherry.
Just a flowering cherry, just a plain cherry. I bought it at Home Depot, yes.
So you might be okay, but so just kind of keep your fingers crossed. Don't cut any of the bark off. Don't put any pruning sealer, any of that stuff, because none of that stuff helps at all. So it's just going to be a matter of the tree kind of recovering on its own.
Oh, I was afraid you were going to say that.
What you can do is you can go out with like some burlap and just wrap the area, you know, wait for a little bit, wrap the area that is split with a burlap and just tape it on with like masking tape or, you know, a tape that will hold it on for a little bit. And then at the end of the season, you know, when the foliage starts falling off, take that burlap off and see what's, you know, see what's going on then.
Oh, yeah. I just wanted to try to help it a little
right.
bit. I didn't know where to start.
Yeah, okay. Use burlap, because that'll let moisture and air in and out. Don't use, you know, any kind of rubber or anything like that at all.
Don't use too much tape either, I guess.
Right, exactly. And the reason why I'm saying masking tape, it might come, you know, the weather might knock it off, and you might have to go out and retape it. But I'd probably, you know, prefer that over some kind of rubberized plastic weatherproof type tape.
Okay. All righty. Thank you so much.
Certainly.
I appreciate it.
My pleasure. And good luck with that. Yeah, it's, you know, it's unfortunate. You know, and hopefully the split wasn't there when the tree was purchased. Because sometimes you can bring home problems from the nursery where you make your purchase.
If I have to replace it, I'll remember that.
Yeah,
thank you so much.
Certainly. Yeah, close inspection is really very much needed. Sandy lives in Collinsville. Sandy, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing, Mike?
Very good.
Good. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Mike, I have two things I need to talk to you about. One, a guy just called in about irises.
Yes.
The bulbs. I've had irises for over 30 years, and they are just going crazy. Last year, I had 7 garden bags that I threw away, and it broke my heart because I didn't want to throw these away. But everybody I knew of already had irises. So if he's interested in irises, I've got plenty of them. You can have. He wants to call in and get my number or whatever, but he's welcome to them if he'd like to have them.
Well, that's great.
Purple. I will say that. They are all the purple variety, but I don't know what the name of the variety is, but... Anyway, and also, there is something that you put on the ground right now to kill the weed seed. Is that called Sterilite?
Well, you can. It's a little bit early, but you can put a pre-emergent down. It might be a little bit early. Usually you want to wait to put the pre-emergence down when the yellow forsythia is in bloom.
Oh, okay.
So, and that will take care of the crabgrass or anything that's, you know, let's say a summer-type weed. So just, you know, it doesn't matter what type of pre-emergent you use. Just make sure that it's an all-purpose pre-emergent that will take care of, you know, any seed that germinates. But realize that if this is lawn areas and things like that where you're going to put it down, you can't put grass seed down and a pre-emergent down at the same time, because a grass seed will be killed.
Right, right. Okay. Well, I use a pre-emergent every, like, like you said, when the chrysanthemums come out, but I didn't know if there was something else I could put on right now to kill the seed totally.
No, you basically not, because the seed's not going to germinate. So there's nothing that, you know, will kill the seed while it's just laying there in a dormant stage.
Okay. All right. That's what I needed to know. Thank
Great.
You so much.
Yeah. Thanks, Sandy. And, you know, for everybody else, too, now this is the time of year, though, not when it's this cold, but when dormant oils can be sprayed on trees and shrubs. The dormant oil suffocates every stage of an insect, everything from the eggs to the larvae, to the pupate stage, to the adults. So, the you know, again, going back to the botanical garden, every February, that's what they did. All the way across the botanical garden, sprayed a dormant oil spray, and really, that really helped control some of the insect problems that may have been sort of there that we weren't, let's say, aware of because the insects came in later on in the season, so... Dormant oil spray this time of year. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, here's Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, as I was talking about the pre-emergence, remember there's two different times to put a pre-emergent down. One is the springtime, basically when the forsythia is in bloom. And that's because... the warm season weeds, everything from spurge to ragweed to knotweed to lamb's quarters to black medic to carpet weed to crabgrass to barnyard grass to goosegrass, they lay there all winter long. And until the soil warms up about the same time the forsythia starts blooming, that's when they germinate. So, but the weeds that are growing now in your lawn or your garden spaces, those are the cool season weeds. And that meant that putting the pre-emergent out in mid to late August, that would have taken care of those weeds. And the cool season weeds that are growing right now, they germinate basically when it's cool. It would be henbit, common chickweed, annual bluegrass, among others. So there's two different series or types of weeds, and that's annual-type weeds. Now, there's perennial weeds, too, and that's a little different story. But let's go now to Webster Groves and see what's going on with David. David, how are you?
Well, two questions now. What is the violet weed? Is that a
that's a tough weed. That's one that grows basically can be germinating in all different kinds of seasons. So putting a pre-emergent down, you know, at both times, that should help get it under control. But it is it's a mean weed.
Yeah, it is. Okay, so then what do you put on the plant, on that honeysuckle plant, once you cut it back? What's the name of the product you put on to kill it off?
Well, you can put Roundup, paint it right on after you make it. You're talking about the shrub honeysuckle, right?
Correct.
So you make the cut at a 45 degree angle, and then take Roundup for killing woody plants and paint it right on that cut right after you make it.
Perfect. Thank you.
All right. Great. Thanks. Yeah. And basically what that does is Roundup will then get sucked down into the through the vascular system and kill everything underground as well as above ground. There's probably other products as well that will do it, but it has to be Roundup for killing woody plants. It'll say Roundup poison ivy killer and woody plant killer on the big label. So it's not regular Roundup. Tom lives in South County. Tom, how are you?
I'm doing good, Mike. The issue I have a piece of property out in the country, and I have an apple orchard on it with about 25, 30 apple trees. And every year we get that infestation of, I believe it's called the emerald beetle. It's a green beetle that just chews the heck out of the foliage off my apple trees.
Yeah, that's Japanese beetle.
Oh, Japanese beetle? Okay.
Right.
And what I'm looking for is a product, I guess, to apply to the areas or, you know, the lawn area around the house and the orchard and that to kill off the grubs. I believe they come from a grub in the ground.
Exactly.
And what is a good product that I can put on that to kill those grubs before they turn into the beetle?
Basically, there are several different types of grub killers. So just, you know, as long as you do the application at the, you know, what the label says at that particular rate, that's really all you need to do. Specific product-wise, it doesn't really matter, just so it says it is a grub killer.
Okay.
Don't put it down too early because the grubs are deeper into the soil now, And so you got to kind of wait until they come up closer to the surface. Then the grub, you know, the grub X or grub killer, whatever, is, you know, goes down through the soil, and then we'll get them right when they're up near the surface. Yeah, they're brutal as far as that's one of the, you know, there's five different kinds of grubs that are here. One, the annual grub, basically it's, let's say, when it's a grub, it does major damage to bluegrass. But when it emerges as an adult, it doesn't do too much damage at all. But a couple of them do damage, like the Japanese beetle slash grub. And so consequently, getting rid of it, when it's a grub stage, it's, you know, destroying root systems of, you know, of lawns, of trees, of any, you know, a lot of different things. And then, but as an adult, it does, you know, more obvious damage than what you can, let's say, assume that's going on underneath the ground.
Well, yeah, it, every year it really does some real damage to my apple trees.
Right, absolutely. So, yeah, you know, just read the label as far as temperature-wise and everything else, as far as, you know, when the best time to actually start applying it.
Okie doke, Mike. Thank you very much.
Yep. And anybody else has any questions or concerns or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Other things that you need to be thinking about in your yard. I was surprised to hear the gentleman said his daffodils are already starting to come up because it seems a little bit premature. But my guess is they're probably coming up on the south side of his house where it's warmer and the heat of his house is reflecting down onto the ground and basically warming the soil in that situation. Because I haven't seen, you know, and I wander through the neighborhood, you know, every morning, sometimes too early to actually see what's going on as far as plant material, you know, just sprouting. And I haven't seen any daffodils or even any crocus. I've yet to see any snowdrops because those are, you know, early season, you know, early spring, February. Snowdrops and winter aconites, those are the earliest, or, you know, earliest, let's say, blooming spring bulbs. And they're not the classic bulb. They almost look like little bitty round pieces of, you know, popcorn. I'm exaggerating a little bit, but they're pretty tiny. But they do, you know, they're the first things that come up, you know, in the springtime as far as from a bulb standpoint. And I have not seen any of those. And there's a couple places, a couple yards that I know have them. So I always know where to go to look as far as finding out what's going on. Other things that you need to be, you know, taking and being aware of, again, is if you've kept chemicals in an unheated garage, be it whether it's a liquid or whether it's a granular, there could have been some damage as a result of all the temperature fluctuations to the liquids and to the granular. You say, well, how could the granular be damaged? Well, the temperature is going high and low and high and low. There may be condensation formed on the inside of the bag, and it could have some impact on the actual granular, you know, whatever it happens to be, whether it's a fertilizer, whether it's a, you know, doesn't matter. Any kind of chemical, whether it's a fungicide, an insecticide, or anything else. So just be aware that this, you know, this temperature, this weather has been kind of detrimental to, or potentially could be. So test it a little bit. So we got another hour of the Garden Hotline, so I will see you after the news.
KMOX is at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Now, here's your host, Mike Miller, on KMOX.
Thank you, Mr. Calhoun, and welcome, folks, to the second hour of the Garden Hotline, which is the tip of the trowel hour, and I'll be giving the tip of the trowel shortly, but right now you can call 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120 with your ideas, questions, concerns, or comments. And by the way, thanks for having me on your show. We're here to discuss plant selections, caring for, ups and downs, and all arounds related to annuals, to bulbs, to edibles, to ground covers, to houseplants, to lawn, perennials, roses, trees, shrubs, vines, and water gardens. And I like to share my thoughts, but remember, my answers, comments, and opinions is certainly not the only garden path to take, but offer for you to consider and maybe use the information or just say, you know, I've had, blah, 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 blah. Doesn't matter. And across the board from me, the big board, is Greg Harvey. He's doing the producing today, so he's answering the phone. He'll ask your name and where you're calling from, and then we'll get you on the computer screen. And during the week, I do something I call a walk and talk. It's a landscape consultation where I come to your home and we discuss what's going on, what might happen, what happens, you know, if plants are maybe even too successful, they're so big, what's going to happen? How can we control them? You know, we'll, whatever. It doesn't really matter. You can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com, and on the homepage, you can get my email address or phone number, and you can contact me, and we'll share, we'll set up a time where I can come over and share 40 plus years of experience related to the outdoors. Started with 1977, and that was when I started at the Botanical Garden. I came back from California and took a position at the Botanical Garden, 4 years in the English Woodland Garden, and my fifth year was in the Climatron. Tip of the trowel is a special recognition for an individual, group, or a situation that's made an impression on me, and it's brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Tip of the trowel, one of them, there's two today, goes to what used to be St. Louis Earth Day. Well, it's a new name. They had their annual Founders Day celebration on January 15th, and St. Louis Earth Day revealed their new name. It's now called Earth Day 365, and they've really evolved over the last 30 years, and many things have changed, and the programming has really, I mean, expanded hugely. So they thought, in relationship to that, we need to change our name to reflect the broader work that they're doing today. So St. Louis Earth Day is now Earth Day 365. So if you're interested in what's going on with that organization, you can, you know, contact them through Earth Day 365. Second tip of the trowel goes out to the Epilepsy Foundation. February 11th is International Epilepsy Day. And February is actually Epilepsy Month. Well, let me tell you a little story that involves me. Longtime listeners may have actually heard this. In February of 1998, I had a grand mal seizure, epileptic seizure, on air. Yes. Bill Ricker was co-hosting at that time. And a couple of weeks prior to that actual grand mal seizure that was on air, I was having a petite seizure. I had no clue what was going on. I thought maybe it kind of felt like I had hit my, you know, funny bone on my elbow, only it was my brain. And consequently, what had happened is prior to that, I started taking allergy medication. And then the disclaimers weren't being done in 1998 like they're being done now. And consequently, this particular allergy medication I was taking said, you know, I found out there was a potential to cause you to have epileptic seizures, or seizures. They didn't call them epileptic seizures. So, you know, I'm one of the 65 million people that have epilepsy worldwide. So I'm sort of a kind of an exclusive crowd. Mine is, you know, controllable. I've been taking the medication ever since 1998. And it was just, it's in a way, I, you know, I'm angry the fact that I have it. But things could be a heck of a lot worse than what they are. So I'm grateful for the medications. And again, February 11th is International Epilepsy Day, and February is International Epilepsy Month. So I'm one of those people, 1998. It was pretty exciting for everybody else, not for me. I was just laying on the floor, you know, shaking and quivering and kicking and doing whoever. And then they scooped me up, put me on a stretcher, and took me to St. Louis University Hospital, where I continue to have now a weekly, let's say, an appointment with an epilepsy doctor as they check me out and say, oh, man, you. No, anyway, enough of that. So that's the two tip of the trowels, Epilepsy Foundation and Earth Day 365. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
The only way you can take KMOX with you is with the Radio.com app. Download it today and listen to us anytime, anywhere. St. Louis's news, traffic, and weather. News Radio 1120, KMOX. Depend on it.
Yes, folks, back to the phones we go, and our first caller is going to be Tim from Belleville. Tim, how are you?
Good morning, Mike.
Hi.
I have a terrace on the south side of my property. And like 5 years ago when I bought the property, it was full of poison ivy, weeds, vines, mulberry saplings. And I have cleared it off, and I've fought it and bought it, and I've got it now to where it is almost weed-free, and it's dirt. And it's a steep terrace.
Woo.
And I don't want to plant grass seed on it because I have a terrace on the other side, and they're hard to cut.
You aren't kidding.
So I'm wondering what I can plant or sow into this that would be maintenance, well, as maintenance-free as possible.
What direction are we facing, and how much sun and those type things?
It's the south side. It's facing the south.
Okay.
And it gets a lot of sun.
So all day long? Well, there's a plant called Crown, C-R-O-W-N, Crown Vetch. It's in the pea family, and you're from Belleville, so you probably haven't been to, let's say, some of the retail areas in Fenton, but they have some very steep slopes there, and that's what, I guess, because it's along, 141, that's what the highway department planted there. It can handle, pretty rough stuff. Now, in the wintertime, it does go away, so you might want to try, a combination of the Crown Vetch, which you're going to get seed. Just make sure it has the inoculant on it, because it is in the pea family. That will help it get to, take off faster. You may have to overseed a couple different times, but then start mixing in some of the liriope. And even though that's, it's evergreen, it is not evergreen either, but it will have a little bit more winter presence. If you, there's not too many other things that are, I don't know how big this space is, but the Crown Vetch will, really kind of take over pretty quickly.
Crown Vetch, and then eventually mix in what was it?
You can mix in some liriope, L-I-R-I-O-P-E.
Liriope. And so, do you have any suggestion where I buy these products?
Basically, any of the garden centers should have them.
Okay.
So
it's a big area. It's 15 feet by 80.
Yeah. So, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily go to, let's say, the big box type garden centers, but the year-round garden centers, they'll have it. They'll tell you exactly what you need to do and everything else.
Thank you very much, sir.
Well, good luck. And, even though, again, the liriope is not evergreen, it will help give a little bit of stability to it. And the Crown Vetch will have some loft. It doesn't grow flat on the ground, so it could end up about 15 or 18 inches, and it does have blue flowers. It's in the pea family. So good luck, Tim. And now let's go to Gene, and Gene lives in Webster Groves. Hi, Gene.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two questions somewhat related. I've been reading about what these fabric pots, I think a common brand name is a Smart Pot, and they claim to help develop better root systems and allow air circulation, et cetera. And so I'd like your thought on that regarding whether that's just a marketing gimmick or if actually there are some applications where it's put to good use. And then it relates to the second question in that I'd love to try growing a fig, and I'm afraid I don't have enough space for either a brown turkey or a Chicago hardy. So I was thinking if I got one of these larger ones and could put it on a dolly and find a more dwarf but hardy to our area fig. I know that's kind of borderline, that is more dwarf than that I could roll in the garage. Do you have any thoughts on either of those approaches?
Well, there are hardy varieties of fig. I mean, it's not going to look like the house type, house plant type fig. But there, in the in the hill, neighborhood of St. Louis, there is a lot of people that have the figs growing in their backyard, and actually, not even just in the hill area. There's, I live in South St. Louis as well, but there's a couple houses that I walk past that have figs in their backyard too. So that shouldn't be, the variety wise shouldn't be all that problematic. I would do a little research if there's, specific name varieties and make sure because of the out. Maybe on a horrible winter, there may be some, let's say twig damage, but they should be able to survive from a root system-wise, trunk-wise, once they're well-established.
Okay.
And then the air pots, I don't, any of that kind of stuff is, it may be perfect, it may be spectacular, it may be this, it may be that, but sometimes I think it's,
I know.
A little bit, you could, give it a test and see what you think. But I wouldn't invest a whole lot of money in it.
Got it. I appreciate it very much. Thank you.
Well, certainly. And thank you for calling and having me on your show. Now let's go to Karen. And Karen lives in Fenton. Hi, Karen.
Good morning.
Hi.
I am planning to do some work in the yard with some grass. And I hear you talking about two emergents, one that's done in February and one a little later. Is there two different products I buy, or are they all the same?
A pre-emergent is a pre-emergent. You don't necessarily have to buy the same one, but pre-emergents kill seeds that germinate. So that's one is not in February necessarily. One is going to be when the yellow forsythia is in bloom.
Right.
So that's not usually in February. It's a little bit later, but it could be in February depending upon the weather. And then right. The other one is in mid to late August.
Oh, I thought they were both early in the okay.
No. I mean, because there's two different series of weeds. There's a cool season weed and then a warm season weed. The
right.
Cool season weed is like henbit and those type things. The warm season weed is like crabgrass and those kind of things.
So I only need to put one round of that down sometime in March when the yellow comes up.
Right, when the forsythia is in bloom. And the reason why I say forsythia, because the soil temperature is, let's say, right around 50, a little bit above 50, and that's when seeds usually start germinating. And want to have your pre-emergent down ahead of that. And what happens is the seeds germinate, then they, you know, come up and come in contact with the pre-emergent, and then it kills them immediately.
Okay. Now, second question about this pre-emergent. If I put sod down, will the pre-emergent hurt the sod?
No, not at all, because this is live plants. It only impacts things that are germinating from seed.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah.
But
okay.
you can't put the pre-emergent down and then come back in and rake or rototill and then lay sod on top of it, because then you've screwed the pre-emergent. The pre-emergent has to be kind of left alone. It creates a continuous sheet across the surface of your lawn areas.
Okay, is there anything I should put down underneath that sod before I put the sod down?
You really should, if you have a major weed problem, just realize that it's going to, probably they're going to be able to push up through the sod, but I probably wouldn't try to put something down, let's say, in anticipation of that. I let the sod get established and then go after it with a pre-emergent the following year.
Okay. And have you ever heard of parsley surviving a winter like this?
I don't know. I don't have any parsley, but I have some thyme, I have rosemary, and I have, let's say, some sages that are growing in window boxes at my house. But parsley, no, I don't know if I've heard of that one.
Okay, I had some pretty hardy parsley outside, and it's still got green stuff on it. And I'm like, what? I'm wondering if it's going to come back up when it warms up.
There's no way to tell, but as long as it looks green, it was like a gentleman a couple weeks ago sent me a picture of pansies, and usually when it gets as cold as it has, the pansies kind of, disappear, and his looks still pretty good, so you never know.
Okay, well, thank you so much. Appreciate your help.
Well, thank you, and now let's go to St. Peter's, first time today, I believe, and into Chris's yard. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
Good.
It's been a long time. I've talked to you some years ago, but my question today is about deer in the yard. I'm getting ready to do some pretty major landscaping in the property out there, and we've got deer that roam around. So I've heard that deer don't like a juga. Is there anything else that you could recommend to keep the deer away?
It doesn't repel the deer. It's just that if it's there, they won't necessarily eat it. That's what we're talking about. So there's
And that's, I mean, I guess I would be interested in both things, that they don't like, or that, I mean, obviously if it would repel them, that would be even better.
Yeah, that's probably not going
to. I was surprised to hear they didn't like a juga. It seems like, it looks like lettuce, so. but I was glad for that, because the juga is pretty cool.
Right. I mean, there is. Let's say from a woody standpoint, we're looking at things that deer will stay away from unless it's a severe winter where they're going to eat anything, that has any kind of moisture in it. Things, ginkgo trees, oak leaf hydrangea, gold thread branch cypress, hawthorns, anything with kind of thorny or stickery type leaves or, needles, they don't like those as much.
Got it, like hollies and that.
Right, hollies they don't like, so. And then as far as perennials and ground cover, sedum, vinca minor, plumbago, creeping phlox, and there's really a whole list of things. You could probably go online to the University of Missouri Extension Service and look for plants that deer do not like. from a bulb standpoint, they don't like crocus. They don't like, you know, flowering onions. They don't like snowdrops. And annual-wise, they don't like marigolds, lantana, snapdragons, cleome. So there is really a lot of plants that they'll stay away from unless things are severe.
Okay. Do you think they'll eat cannas like crazy?
It depends upon how dry the summer is. Because a lot of times they're going for moisture, and, man, those canna stems are full of moisture, and so are the leaves.
Yeah, got it. Okay. All right, well, we'll see.
Yeah.
I've heard you can hang bars of Irish Spring around, and they don't like that.
Definitely. That is somewhat of a repellent. And then somebody called a couple weeks ago, I think, and she said she hangs aluminum pie pans in trees, and apparently, you know, that sound or that movement or that reflection the aluminum pie pan does also keeps them away.
Got it. Yeah, I don't know if I could go for pie pans hanging around, but maybe I could hide them somewhere. So,
yeah, they just have you know, that banging sound, but I don't know if you want to hear the banging sound.
Yeah, that's true. All right, well, I'll give it a try.
Okay, great.
Thanks for the advice.
Certainly. And Mark, Bill, and Dolores will be talking to you after this break.
This is your morning.
There's the bus!
This is our morning.
I'm Tom Ackerman alongside Debbie Monterey. We will
Debbie and Tom keep you up to date with world, national, and local news.
It's more repercussions from the Eric Greitens sex.
Captain Roger Brand and Maria Kina with the latest traffic.
Southbound 61 onto 64 again rolling.
Westbound 44, it's heavy.
Dean DeVore with weather.
There could be some icy spots.
Plus the latest from the world of sports.
Yadier Molina just finished signing here at Cardinals Care Winter Warm-Up.
Getting you going and out the door with the information you need. Total Information AM. Weekday mornings beginning at 5 on KMOX. This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with your host, Mike Miller, on KMOX.
Yes, folks, back to the phones we go. And if you do have any questions, concerns, or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Yes, hanging, as a gentleman I was just talking to, Irish Spring soap in your trees definitely repels a deer, and it's really smells strong. I'll tell you, I don't have deer problem because I live in the city of St. Louis, but I use Irish Spring soap because there's a stop sign at the corner. We live on an intersection of two different streets that all the dogs have to mark. And what I started doing is I started cutting up pieces of Irish Spring soap and just sprinkling them around kind of within several feet of that stop sign. The dogs know they don't do that anymore to the stop sign. Of course, they're going to find some other place to mark, but at least it's not where every time I'd look out the window, there'd be some dog, you know, and there's a lot of dogs in our neighborhood. I love dogs. I like dogs. Dogs are great, and you can't really stop them from doing it, but I thought, well, maybe I'll have them go someplace else. So, anyway, let's go to Mark, and Mark lives in South City. Mark, how are you?
I'm fine, and good morning to you, Mike. Two questions. I have been putting coffee grounds in my compost pile. Is that, that's not, you know, detrimental to that pile, is it?
No, it isn't.
Okay, what about just spreading them willy-nilly about the yard?
That won't do any good.
Won't do any good.
Not really. I mean, my grandmother used to do that. You know, she would put them around her roses, but mm-hmm. There was even a company that was talking about coffee grounds and, you know, all this other stuff, and they tried to convince people to use it. You know, they had big amounts that they got from, let's say, Starbucks or places along that line, and, it, you know, they gave up because it really doesn't do all that much when you're just kind of, you know, scattering them around. But mixing in with a compost pile, it won't do a whole lot because they're relatively small, but it will, you know, it's not detrimental, and it is organic.
Second question, what about planting trees this time of year?
The ground's a little bit cold, so I wouldn't necessarily plant now. But within a couple weeks, the ground will be a little bit warmer. There's no problem planting them now. It's just that they won't get any kind of root system established or anything along that line. You can go ahead and plant them because they're going to be down in a hole, so that would act, you know, to protect the root system from any, hopefully, where this is the last cold spell we're going to have. But other than that, and the problem is if the ground is frozen and you dig it, then it's going to be clumpy. Then when you put it back around the root system of anything that you plant, you're going to have air pockets there, and the air pockets could fill up with cold air again, and that could do some damage to the root systems of any newly installed plant.
Okay. Well, that that does it then for me. I appreciate it.
Great.
I enjoy my Saturdays in the morning with you. Mike, have a good day.
Well, thank you. And Centralia, Illinois, and we're going into Bill's yard. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Mike. How are you today?
Very good.
I have my rhubarb that I've never ever had luck with, and it overwintered, and it's got some little things under the compost. I mean, you know, like it's getting ready to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And it's mulched. Is there anything special I have to do with it?
You don't want too much mulch over the top of it, but once you start seeing, I'm assuming you're talking about the foliage coming up through it, just pull it so there's not a whole lot of mulch covering, covering the plant.
Okay. And then I found some old marigold seed that I had squirreled away, I guess. And, I mean, not marigold, but hollyhock. I've never had any luck with hollyhock. Can you give me some ideas on how to maybe get it started and continue? My father-in-law always said I had too good a ground for hollyhocks.
Well, that's maybe true, but you realize hollyhocks are biennial. So the first year, they're only going to produce leaves. The second year, they're going to produce flower and some leaves. So as long as you understand that. But, yeah, just get the seed and get a seed starter type potting mix and start them in, you know, small pots. And then once they start germinating and growing, then go ahead and plant them outside in the garden. Or, you know, you start them in the seed starter potting mix in pots. And, you know, outside, don't do it too early because it's just too cold. And then consequently, once they, you know, get a decent or adequate size, let's say the same size that you might get in a garden center, then plant them into the ground.
Okay. That really helps me a lot.
Yeah, because
I'll be glad if I see if the seedlings come up.
But yeah, get that potting mix for starting plants, and it's, you know, you could even get flats like the garden centers have, where you can get 36 small plants if you buy a whole flat, or there's little six packs, and just put one or two seeds in each one of those little squares.
You have to realize we're not in the epic garden center of the world either.
No one is in this part of the world. Well, good luck, Bill.
Well, I can tell you some good places to get tomato plants, though. And peppers, but nothing as fancy as hollyhocks.
Right. Yeah, hollyhocks are, you don't see them for sale too much in garden centers. I think most people do grow them from seed. And then they'll self-seed after that. They'll drop the seed, you know, the second year after they flower.
Okay, thank you very much,
yep.
Mike, and a tip of the trowel to you, too.
Well, thank you, and a tip of the trowel to everyone. And remember, if you weren't there, I would not be here, so I greatly appreciate it. Let's go now to Dolores, and Dolores is in Fenton. Hi, Dolores.
Hi there.
Hi.
I'm wondering, since we've had such cold weather, wouldn't this be a good time to get rid of the poison ivy?
Poison ivy is not going to be impacted by the cold, if that's what you mean.
Really?
No. It could care less.
Oh, my gosh. I thought now I would be safe to do it.
Well, you can, as long as you don't get the sap, yes, you could do it this time of year because you're going to have gloves on, you're going to have everything on, and that will keep it away from your skin. But just realize, too, the sap from the root systems and everything else, you get it on your clothes or you get it on.
Oh, no.
Yeah. That's sort of the same nightmare.
Isn't this cold? Didn't kill that?
Heavens no.
Oh. Well, that's not what I wanted to hear.
Well, I can tell you whatever you want to hear.
Well, I want to know the safest, easiest way to get rid of it.
It's really a tough circumstance. Quick story about when we moved from the city of St. Louis by the Botanical Garden out to Ellisville. The back stretch of our property line was infested with poison ivy.
Mm.
And this was, in 1955, so there wasn't all the herbicides and everything available. So what my parents did, luckily there was a farmer, because Ellisville at that time was pretty much farming country. He came through with his plow, and every year for a couple years, he just plowed it all up, and then finally it got rid of it, except for a few sprigs, and that, it just kind of haunted my parents for basically as long as they were alive, because they stayed in the same house.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Okay, well,
But again,
I thought you were going to say, well, it's been so cold, you can just grab it out and.
No, I would not do that.
It'd be safe to do it. No,
but there is,
I am allergic to it.
Well, there is a Roundup that's for killing poison ivy. So you can put, this herbicide, once the foliage comes out early in the season, spray Roundup on it, because the Roundup will kill not only the stems, but it'll start killing the root system below the ground.
Any kind of Roundup?
No. It has to be Roundup. It'll say specifically for killing poison ivy and woody plants.
And what?
Woody. W-O-O-D-I-E or W-Y.
Especially for killing the poison ivy. Okay.
Right. You got
to
get that one.
Wait until it starts coming up.
Yeah, because you got to have it. It's got to go onto the leaves. It can't just be absorbed into the stems.
Okay. And how do I put it on the leaf? I just powder, sprinkle it on?
No. It's a spray.
It's a spray.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you can stay back.
I heard you think about painting something on leaves.
Now, you can do that, but I would say just use the spray.
Spray. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Certainly. Yeah, poison ivy, I get it severely.
And that cold weather wouldn't kill it or nothing.
No.
it's tough, isn't it?
It is very tough and very itchy.
Oh, boy, I should say. Yes. Thank you so much.
Certainly.
All right. Bye-bye, Mike.
Bye. Rogerine lives in St. Louis. Hi, Rogerine.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
Good.
Oh, I've been listening to you I get up on Saturday morning to listen to your show. But my daughter bought me some Calla lilies for Christmas, and I want to know a good time to put them in the ground.
Now, they're not hardy, so they can't stay outside in the ground.
Oh, they can't?
No, they can't. I'm just not, in theory, they'll say maybe, maybe not, but I would say you're probably better off just to grow them in pots.
Just to grow, okay.
And then bring the pots inside in the wintertime.
Okay. So I think that's just about all I have for today, but I enjoy your show very much.
Well, thanks for having me on your show. I greatly appreciate it. Yeah, the calla lilies are really popular, but if you lived in the Climatron, they would be able to stay in the ground all year long.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Unfortunately, I live in the West End near Wash U.
Not quite like the Climatron.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
And thank you, and you have a great day.
Certainly. And Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, will be back after these messages.
Hey guys, it's Alex Ferrario. Join me and Amy Markscores for Chili's Week in Hockey as we dive deep into the blue season every Monday night. Notes from around the league and everyone's favorite, What's Up With That? 8 to 10 Monday nights on KMOX.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, here's Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, let's head to Sunset Hills and see what's going on with George. George, how are you today?
Hey, Mike.
Hey.
Hey, Mike. Good to hear from you today. I only had one question to begin with, but the longer I listen to you, the more questions I get.
Uh-oh.
Just first of all, I got to tell you, I go out to St. Louis Compost every year and drive around and look at the bins. First of all, I'm fascinated by the place, but to see what kind of new stuff they got, it's unbelievable.
It is.
Unbelievable. Do they still carry Hansen's mix out there?
No, they don't. They never did. And Hansen's is a separate company entirely.
Oh, it was. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, because I got it a couple of times. I thought I got it from there.
No, you got it. Hansen's used to, they were a lot more prominent when he used to sponsor the Garden Hotline than they are now.
Okay. Tell me about that rock mulch. What is that?
It's just different color rock. Around my house, what I did is when we moved, like 11 years ago, I put a steel edger about 3 to 4 feet away from the house foundation, and I chose river rock, which is the tan rock.
Okay.
And so that's basically what it is. So it's just an alternative to a bark. It's not organic. And then I put landscape fabric underneath it to keep it from sinking.
Okay. And then I was going to put in, I've cleared off space in the back of my yard, a pretty good size area, to turn it into a butterfly garden. And I was going to go down to, order the milkweed.
Mm-hmm.
From Missouri, if I put it in to this year, will I get milkweed this year?
You probably won't. I don't know if you're going to get blooms or not. It's just, it depends upon weather and everything else. My guess is probably not. And you may, it might be to your advantage if you start to see some of the flower buds, you know, coming, you know, cut them off, because, you know, young plants flowering can really cause, you know, some stress depending upon the weather. So you could get them, but they're probably going to be relatively small at best.
So it's really a two-year project.
Yeah, well, it's a multiple-year project because it's a perennial to keep getting bigger, bigger, expanding, growing, and everything else.
Okay. And then the last question is, you know, you start getting in all these catalogs this time of year.
Right.
And I see some wonderful, wonderful plants. What do you think about ordering from them?
It depends upon the plant. It depends upon the source. I like to, you know, see things up close and personal myself, but that's just who I am. So there's probably, you know, good quality and everything else, but, you know, like I said, I want to see it. I want to look at it. I don't want to have something that just kind of comes in, you know, in a box.
Yeah, because I got a catalog from Jung's. I took it down to, and they had some beautiful butterfly bushes in there, and took it down to Kirkwood Supply to see if they carry them. And interestingly enough, they said they didn't, and didn't know if they could get them. So,
well, there is, I mean, the Budleia, which is a butterfly bush, most garden centers are going to have them.
Maybe not this kind of, this particular variety, though.
That could be, yes.
Okay. All right. Oh, that's the other one. They have a big mail order up in, is it in Louisville here in Missouri? Have you been to it? It's a big mail order house, but you can go in there and buy plants and things.
Well, there's
go ahead.
Yeah, Forest Keeling. There are several along, you know, up 79.
79, right.
Right.
Have you been to any of them?
Well, I've broadcast from a couple of them. So, yes.
So is it worthwhile to take a trip up there?
Absolutely. It's a great ride. It's great fun and everything else. Also, you go past a couple wineries if you're interested.
Okay. Fantastic, Mike. As
all right.
Usual, thank you very much.
Certainly. Now let's go to Wayne in Washington, Missouri. Hi, Wayne.
Hi. I heard somebody mention a while ago pineapple trees. You know, I never thought about it before. Is there no fruit that grows just like in a vegetable garden? All fruit grows on trees and bushes, is that correct?
No, a pineapple does not grow here. It can't grow here. You can grow it inside as a house plant, but basically what you can do is just take a pineapple, cut the top, the green, the leaves off, and let that dry, and then put it in a pot with potting mix, and then it should grow.
Well, I'm not interested in growing it. I'm, you know, wherever it grows, whatever country or whatever. So, in other words, all of that grows on tree. I would love to see a pineapple tree.
No, pineapple does not grow on a tree. A pineapple grows coming out of the ground, kind of like a yucca plant.
This guy mentioned pineapple trees, and I thought, what in the world is he talking about?
No, I don't know. I missed that one. There was fig trees. You know, we talked about that, but not pineapple trees.
Okay, there is no fruit other than pineapple grows in the ground then?
No, there's other fruits, you know, that can do that as well. But pineapples, you know, just go to Hawaii. You can see.
I'd like to be there this morning.
All right, great. Well, thanks, thanks, Wayne. Now let's go to Don in West County. Hi, Don.
Hi, how are you doing this morning?
Good.
Listen, for many years, I just wanted a little vegetable garden in my backyard. I'd take some potting soil, throw it down because West County clay is not very fertile,
right,
and then put my tomato plants inside that and peppers and things like that. I want to go a little bit farther. I got some big, nice, long, 8-foot long 2x6s, and I want to make a little fenced-in garden with that. What do I have to do to the ground to prepare it, and what should I put in that to have a fertile base for normal vegetables?
Turn the soil over with a rototiller, all that kind of stuff. Then go to St. Louis Compost and get their raised bed mix and mix that in with your existing soil.
Okay, I've been there, the compost, a number of times. And say that again, it's raised bed
mix. It's STL, raised bed mix. And that's, mix it in with the existing soil. Don't just lay it on the top of the soil. So you have to prepare your soil first.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to put it right where I've had. I've usually just dumped a couple of bags of potting soil there. So if I just kind of turn all of that over and put the mix in there.
And then mix it together. Yes, that's all you need to do.
So I don't have to go down deep to get too much into that clay and all that kind of stuff.
Well, the deeper the better. So don't just, you know, kind of use a rake or something. You're going to have to rototill this space.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Right.
And I like what you had to say earlier in the show about the two outfits to support at this time. Thanks very much.
Well, thank you. And, gee, Laura, I don't think we can get to you because we got less than a minute. So I want to thank everybody for all their support through all these years and everything else. But I want to say this to Charles Brennan. You better not try to take over the Garden Hotline or I'm coming after you, buddy. And so even though it can sound like me, I don't know if he can pull it off, but he probably can because Charles Brennan is pretty smart. So again, this is related to Charles Brennan last Wednesday doing an imitation of my voice, and it was scary how good it was. So have a great day. Don't freeze, and let's get winter over with. I'm sick and tired of it. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. I hope to see you next week.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.